Hello, we are the Brothers Geek. This is our podcast. Woo! Episode number.
Is that the new?
Woo!
I just is the half-assed whoop. Is that part of the official introduction now? From now on, I think so. Half-assed whoop.
It needs like an exclamation point at the end of it.
It just needs like the Brothers Geek podcast. That is all you need to say because fuck, we are the brothers.
We are the Brothers Geek.
This is our podcast. Let's fucking do it.
Let's fucking do it.
Too much F words.
Never too many F words.
Episode number 72. You're so delicate.
I am delicate.
Suck it up. Get your shit together, Patrick.
Come on. Is everything all right in Portland?
Man, everything's fine.
Okay. Everything? Are you delicate?
Yeah. Episode number 72, February 15th, day after Valentine's Day.
After Valentine's Day,
yeah, that's when we're recording.
I know it to be.
Hello.
Yeah.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Andrew said hello, like he lost us.
Guys.
Oh, yes. He can't hear us.
Andrew,
what did you do, Andrew? He broke it.
God damn.
We can hear you, Andrew.
Such an idiot.
We might have to start over because of him.
Oh no!
What did he do? Don't start over. Splice. We can hear you. Did he disconnect?
You're such an idiot.
Guys, can you hear me?
Yes. Hello.
He just wrote.
Okay, I can't hear you guys at all. Did I mute myself? Did I mute you? What the heck happened?
You must have muted us, dude.
What an idiot. He's such an idiot.
What did he do?
Where's the typing?
This is weird. I can't hear you guys at all.
I'm going to hang up on him and call his dumbass back.
Goddamn.
How do I hang up on him? I'm just going to hang up on Baldi.
No. Okay, I'm sorry. There you are. I'm an
what?
Idiot.
What? Oh.
Never mind. Sorry.
Jesus.
Shut up.
That's staying. That's staying in there to show the listeners how much a dumbass you are.
This has been a great day for my ego. Let me tell you.
Oh man, I'm sorry, bro.
You're both delicate flowers.
I've been fucking stuff up all day today.
Jesus, stop screwing stuff up, man. What the hell?
I know, right? I can't.
God,
you're a human being. Right.
Get it right, Andrew.
You're a human being. People make mistakes.
This is true. 100%. 100%. That's what's happening. So we're brothers and we're geeks, and some of us are better than others.
That's terrible at podcasting.
Some of us are really bad at podcasting. That's fine. We're
72
here.
72 fucking episodes.
Yeah.
Shit. We're still.
Andrew's
a clown show, dude. It's a freaking clown show.
No, it's fun. We're having fun.
Sometimes it's a clown show. Yeah.
So,
sometimes it's a clown show.
Let's get right into it. We have a rewatch this week. I don't know. Did we say something on Twitter? I didn't. Did somebody tell the listeners?
I don't think we did.
Okay, it's fine. We rewatched this, and if you haven't watched The Last Airbender... If you haven't watched any of The Last Airbender, we're about to ruin the end of The Last Airbender.
Stop the podcast and go watch the entire show.
Go watch that. If you don't care about it being ruined, then just keep listening. And I mean, so we should give you a little bit of background.
If you don't care, you're a bad person.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, check this. Okay,
man, we're not talking about it.
They're not a bad person, terrible M. Night Shyamalama.
This is the cartoon that they based that movie on.
That terrible.
We're not talking about the movie.
Yeah, we're talking about
one of the best shows that has ever been on TV.
The cartoon
on Nickelodeon, the best animated series ever. I mean, it's arguably as good as. Batman the Animated Series is probably the best animated series ever.
This show right now is on Amazon Prime streaming, so if you have a Prime membership, you can go watch it. All three seasons. Leading up to we just agreed for the rewatch to do the last episode, which is like really three episodes put together. The finale of the show, of the season and the series. And I rewatched the whole third season.
You watched the entire Book of Fire?
Yeah, because
I knew
that we had like a couple of weeks, so I just binge watched it a little bit slowly over time, couple episodes, and it was great. I haven't watched it.
I'm going to watch it from the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, the first season is pretty kiddy, and they it's very safe, and there's a lot of filler episodes. The second season, they really start to get their act together. Once they get to like Ba Sing Se and like the Earth Kingdom, and they get more into the lore of the world, it's definitely better. And then the third season is awesome because it takes place all in the Fire Nation, and they're like hiding and trying to stay secret and trying to learn firebending. And
yeah, it's very tense and very, yeah.
So
it's great.
What I like to talk about, my first thought on the finale is I think it was very clever of how they got rid of the villain without killing him, because it is a Nickelodeon show, and they talk about like, hey, how do we get rid of this bad guy? And there's sort of this moral conundrum between Aang having to kill somebody.
Well, Aang is the Avatar, meaning he's the bridge between the physical world and the spirit world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's essentially, I mean, there's all these superhumans in the world that can manipulate the elements, but Aang can manipulate all four. So he is inherently more powerful than everyone else.
Yeah.
And he wrestles with what that actually means. And when he's faced with a firebender who essentially wants to commit genocide, and how will he deal with that? And he's a pacifist. He's an airbender he hates to fight.
And he's a vegetarian. Like, he doesn't even want to, like...
He is absolutely... He's not a warrior. And I think part of a little bit of the tragedy of the show is he kind of has to embrace that warrior side of being the Avatar, which he almost has avoided for all 59 episodes leading up to the finale.
Yeah, he
I don't think he embraces it. I'm going to disagree. Go
for it.
I think he loses himself to the Avatar state in the final fight,
which is scary. It's a scary kind of moment.
He becomes the vengeful. All like following up on what you said, he's clearly the most powerful being in the world. He just in being able to tap into the Avatar state, which has been an issue for him.
Yes.
Right, leading up to that, he is injured. Right, and and he's essentially blocked.
Mm-hmm.
And very sort of having a difficult time. There's lots of episodes leading up to the finale where he's really having a tough time. He's got that injury in his back. It's affecting sort of his ability to tap into the Avatar power.
Mm-hmm.
And he's questioning everything about himself and what his role is. And then during that fight, he is injured directly on the spot where he was injured before.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And
where Azula hit him with blue lightning in the end of the second season.
So that triggers sort of he loses control.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's during the fight, it's his he has lost himself to the Avatar state, and he is this wrathful Avatar who is going to smoke this fool. Using all of his abilities, and it's only at that point where he has actually defeated the Phoenix King that he regains control and really becomes Aang again. So,
yeah.
And one of the things that the commentary points out is that in all the other flashback scenes, the Avatars, their eyes flash the bright light,
mm-hmm.
And then it goes away, and they're able to use the Avatar power while not being like totally consumed by the Avatar state.
Yeah.
And in that moment, he stops himself. He is going to kill. I'm forgetting his name. He's going to kill the dude, right? The Fire Lord.
The Fire Lord.
Fire Lord.
And Ozai.
Ozai.
Yeah.
Ozai.
And he catches himself. He being consumed and controlled by the Avatar state, is going to kill him, and he stops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's the moment where Avatar reasserts himself, and or Aang reasserts himself and becomes Aang, who is the Avatar, not vice versa. Yeah,
exactly.
Yep. It's a great... Yeah, no, it is... Well, anyway, go ahead. But it, I mean, I no, watched
it's
that.
Stunning,
and
it is stunning television.
Stunning television.
And you, and just in the, I mean, the minute that you described what happened, it illuminated. I mean, all of this lore and mythology that they've built through this show, of this world they've constructed, is right. Just so deep. And it's a Nickelodeon show, dude. It's so, and you're, you know, it is Nickelodeon. You are in a position where you don't want to kill anyone because it is a show that's been made conceivably for children, even though we watched it as adults and we loved it as adults. But you know, you're faced with a character having to make that deep moral choice, having to have this deep personal realization about himself, and it's a show designed for, you know, 10-year-olds or 12-year-olds, and
yeah.
But it's got all that depth to it, and besides the fact that it has some of the coolest martial arts fighting you'll ever see in any movie or any television show.
There are some really cool, like, anime, like, fighting, like, kung fu fighting in this show that is, like, fantastic and really interesting.
Yeah.
And fun, quirky ideas like, hey, if you're able to manipulate metal, you can, like, surround yourself in the door and protect yourself from the firebenders and then throw them all around because you're way more badass than they are. Or
it's got lots of fun elements like that, too.
Right, we're going to smash the airship into you because I can bend the rudder and turn the airship into the other ones. Like, stuff like that, like, is fun and clever and interesting and, like,
the music is so well done.
The music is so
and
good.
It's cues and it evokes all of the emotion that you're supposed to feel and enhances the experience. It's just a perfectly crafted episode of TV.
It's one of the best finales I've ever seen for any show.
Yeah, how many finales for TV shows can you say that you're 100% satisfied with? I was 100% satisfied with the ending.
Maybe
of this
on
show.
One, maybe on one hand, you can talk
there's
about
one
how many.
Note. There's one note that is the but it, on the of the Zuko confronting his father, asking where his mother is.
Yeah, that is left open.
That's the open sort of thread. But even that is like a tease for. You know, these people, their lives go on. I think it's a punctuating point in that their lives go on.
Right.
And there are more things they're going to do, and we're not answering all the questions. And that's
totally.
I love that about it. I love it.
Absolutely.
Let's
a little bit of backstory on how on our love for this finale is. I forget what year it was, but the finale for the series was a week or two. Was a couple of weeks before Comic-Con.
San Diego Comic-Con.
San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And we all had tickets to that year's Comic-Con. So we watched the finale, and we hear
that... Is that the year Daniel went?
That is the year Daniel went. He went with us to this panel. Yes. So it was the year that all four of us
were all there. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
we hear that they were going to have a panel where they were the creators for the show, and it was going to be like a two-hour panel. It was going to be like at, you know, like on Thursday or Friday night, and nighttime programming was pretty rare at that point. They were going to show the back half of the finale, and then the creators were going to have like awards, and they were going to have fan contests and costume contests. And we got in line, and we waited in line to get into this room, and the room was completely full, standing room only. And it was maybe a 300, 400 seat room, and they turned away hundreds of people. And all of us sat and watched this finale, and then the creators talked about how they conceived the show and everything else, and they had costume contests.
One of my favorite all-time panels ever.
Oh, it might be my favorite moment from any Comic-Con we've ever been to.
Yeah,
is going to that panel, all of us together. We all love the show. I mean, Daniel really got into the show too. We all got free T-shirts, free really cool Avatar T-shirts.
Cool Avatar T-shirts, yeah.
And to see, how the fandom spread across all these age groups, all these different ethnicities, because in the world itself, there's all these different ethnicities. All the Airbenders, Fire Nation, they all kind of have totally distinct cultures. It was really a great time at Comic-Con that year.
That's part of, I think, my gripe with the Avatar like TV or as the Avatar movie, The Last Airbender, is it has all these like cool elements to it that they kind of just like threw away. Like, you know, the Firebender.
Why are we even talking about that dumbass movie?
Let's not even talk about the movie.
Just ruined, man. Like,
you know, just there's no bigger. So disappointing.
Terrible.
So terrible. It's not. It's not even that it was mediocre. I mean, we have our qualms with certain things.
It's an affront to the series.
Terrible. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is.
It gives me rage.
Yep.
Because the series is so good, and it should be a movie. It could be a series of movies that would be incredible. We have the technology to produce everything in live action that's in that show.
And
they fucked it up as much as they humanly possibly could.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He just completely made that great story, that great series, boring. He made it boring.
And
not good. And, like, yeah. Anyways. But this show, I mean, it is for kids, but it's got some really cool elements to it. It's just written really well, looks cool, and the action is fun, and it's quirky. It's got this humor to it.
Well, you said it's
goofy humor. Yep.
It's got this
you
goofy said it
humor. In the finale, there's goofy humor.
Right.
In the finale, there's goofy humor. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, there's this part. The thing that like still made me laugh out loud funny is oh my god, I'm blanking on his name right now. The Sokka's holding the sword and he's on the side of the ship and they're about to fall off and this firebenders are about to firebend at him and he has to throw his sword to cut the platform that the guy is and he falls and
sword tumbles to the earth.
The sword, he has to throw away his sword and he says goodbye space sword. And that's
it's made out of meteorite.
Sadness with him because it's this funny moment and Sokka, you know, he's the only non-powered or non-Avatar member of Team Avatar.
But he's way smarter than all of them.
You see how you see his evolution over the entire series. He's totally comic relief and then by the end of the finale, you know, and especially in the back half of the third
season. He is a contributor.
He plans the battle.
Exactly.
He plans out the battle in the final season. He has, like, the plan. He tells everybody what to do. And like, all the benders are just like, what are we doing now? What's going to happen? Like, they all are looking to him because, I mean, they're a bunch of kids, really. I mean, it's a bunch of kids fighting adults. And
Toph is supposed to be like 10.
Right.
He's supposed to be 12. Katara is supposed to be like 12 or 13 and Sokka's supposed to be like 13 or 14.
Yeah, and what? Zuko is like 15, 16? Right. Yeah. So they're all like teenagers, kids and teenagers fighting this adult war and following around the most powerful kid on the planet. Mm-hmm. And it's just this interesting idea of him figuring out what he has to do, and the show is great. I don't know if we can else to say about the finale, like the rewatch.
It's great TV.
Sell it on.
Well, there's one thing we didn't touch on at all that I want to touch on.
Okay,
the fight, the Agni Kai between Azula and Zuko.
Awesome,
awesome,
totally.
With the blue lightning and shit.
The blue lightning and the music. And
the fight
and how. Deliberately kind of tragic the whole thing is.
Yeah.
Because you really see Azula lose her mind.
Yep.
Yeah.
You really see her go crazy and become completely unhinged and how her brother has to...
And the sadness that produces in both of them.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not triumphant in any way. It is that last shot of the two of them looking at Azula and she is a broken person and they are just sad about it. They are sad.
I love that Azula ends up getting defeated by Katara, who is probably the greatest waterbender ever.
Yeah.
She just wrecks.
Mm-hmm.
And even with the comet, like, she still can't beat her. Like, she's like juiced up right now, but like Katara still smokes her, and I love that.
Well, that final shot or how she defeats her is so perfectly waterbending. Like, it's the epitome of defeat without killing sort of waterbender, and there's just that shot of the freezing of them two in that sort of cool shaped ice thing, and then she frees herself and allows herself to move inside the ice trap and lashes up Azula's wrists. It's just a great scene.
Very, very, very cool. Yep. Do you guys have anything else to say on that subject?
Well, I'll say this just to close. Watch the series. It's 60 22-minute episodes. The first series is some kiddie stuff, some really good episodes spread out in there that are the second book, the Earth book, is freaking great. It's my favorite season, and the third season is just amazing, the Fire Nation. It's well worth your time if you can find it.
And if you like that, you should still watch Legend Korra, which I think that is definitely not as good, but the world is interesting, and I like it for the world aspects and how they continue the story. And, you know, they're descendants of Aang and Katara and Sokka and all these guys running around. So it's and they see the impact that Aang has on the world afterwards, like 80 years later. It's really cool. And that's why I really liked it. But, I have a debate topic for us tonight. I've been rewatching some Next Generation just because Star Trek is awesome, and I wanted to see from around the table what you guys thought for your favorite episode of the Next Generation, because there's a few. Jump out if you got a favorite. Christopher, you guys still there? Oh no. All right. Sorry, we lost Skype there for a second. Christopher, what's your favorite episode?
Yeah, no, this is a real tough call for me, because I watched that entire series in real time.
Oh, God, yes. Susan, it was on Monday nights at 9 o'clock.
Susan and I watched it from day one when it premiered.
I loved watching Star Trek.
And
I used to watch it with Dad.
I loved it. I really think, as I'm looking at a list here of the 25 episodes you must watch, which is reminding me, I'm not real good with episode names, but every time I think about Next Generation and my favorite episode, this one always comes to mind, and I think it is my absolute favorite episode. The episode is called The Inner Light.
It's so good.
This is the episode where they are in space, and they encounter an alien probe, which knocks Picard. What everybody on the ship, seeing him, he is rendered unconscious by this alien probe. Meanwhile, Picard is experiencing inside his coma another planet and another culture.
Well, he thinks of himself, like, he wakes up and he thinks that, like, he got teleported there. He thinks he is
Picard.
Right.
Living, but everyone else thinks he's some other guy.
No. They think he's him. He's just trying to convince him.
Yeah.
Right.
And then he lives out his entire life.
Yeah.
The remainder of his life,
He
learns to play this instrument. That's from the culture. He experiences love and loss and death and the entire gamut of a life and a culture and a people and just this amazing experience of Picard and his curiosity and his sort of what his character is. Is transported into this culture, and he experiences all of it to the point where he is surrounded by family and then passing away, right? I think that's the end.
The end of the episode is the sun going supernova.
That's and, right.
Like, the planet being destroyed.
That's right. They're all living under the specter of the sun is going to destroy the planet.
Right. Yeah. He
and that's
even,
what happens.
Right. He kind of like he gets involved in the science of he's like a scientist on this planet.
Well, he starts to study it. Like Picard, being Picard, tries to learn what's going on, and he tries to figure it out, and
it's this poignant episode, and then he wakes up from the coma on the Enterprise.
It's been 25 minutes.
It's been period of time. He has lived years.
Yep.
And they find in the probe, they find the instrument he learned to play.
The flute that he taught himself to play.
Other artifacts. And he is transformed as a person.
Yep.
And the culture sent this probe into space exactly for this purpose. To remember these people and their world because it was ending. And it's so poignant and wonderful. And Picard does such a good job. Patrick Stewart does such a good job. Absolutely my favorite. That episode is my favorite. And the music is amazing. It's
the simple melody that he teaches himself on that on that flute that he plays.
And then when he plays it on the Enterprise, it's just
God. It's heartbreaking.
Wonderful.
I agree with
you.
This is generally regarded as one of the best Next Generation episodes. You're absolutely right. And what's interesting about it is Picard isn't a family man. Like, through multiple seasons, he's a very solitary character. You see him have a few romances because, they got to have some romances, but he doesn't do well with children. He doesn't have any long-term relationships at all. He's a very solitary figure, and that's who his character is. And you see him in this episode have this full, rich life where he comes to love his wife very deeply, and he has children that he's affectionate with and that he comes to really care about, and he at some point you see him passing the years, he embraces that he is who they think he is, and he falls in love with these people, and it's a wonderful kind of they're not human beings, but he lives a whole human life. And you see Picard in this whole different light, and it's just such a fantastic
episode. Is this your favorite episode too, Andrew?
It isn't, actually.
Okay.
My episode is another very Picard-centric episode, but it's all about Picard's nobility.
Okay.
There's an episode later on in the seasons called The Drumhead.
Oh, yeah.
There's this terrorist act, sabotage act on the Enterprise, and this retired, very well-respected prosecutor comes.
Admiral. She's an admiral.
An admiral, but she was like a prosecutor in Starfleet. She was like a legal person. She wasn't like an explorer or anything, but she was like a judge. Mm-hmm. She comes on board the Enterprise to investigate what happened and to seek out the saboteur and any kind of co-conspirators. And through the investigation, they go on these tangents of they find kind of incriminating evidence about people that has nothing to do with the conspiracy, and they're seeking out all of these, guilt by association, and it's a total metaphor about, communism and, witch hunts and things like that.
It's a courtroom episode. It's a lot of presumed innocence and
It's McCarthyism.
Totally McCarthyism.
Right.
Absolutely.
Your own biases getting in the way of
what makes it prejudice so wonderful for me, and it really is about Picard's nobility and how he's this example of, the utopia idea of the Federation. He gets caught up in this and he challenges her power, so she, essentially charges him with some kind of crime and puts him on the stand and begins examining him and questioning his motives and questioning who he is and brings up all this, brings up his trauma with the Borg and, all of these things that, we've seen Picard wrestle with the fact that he wasn't strong enough to confront and defeat the Borg. He was assimilated. He lost himself and he had to be saved.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another. I mean, that's another fantastic episode where he has to go home and he's confronted with his brother.
That's a great episode.
But there's a great speech at the end of this episode that's all about Picard's nobility and you know, making people realize that, you know what, this isn't the best version of ourselves, that we can't give in to our prejudices. And, you know, it for a sci-fi show to go in that direction and to, you know, hold a mirror up to, it's so easy to demonize people and to, you know.
What season is this in again, Andrew? Do you remember?
It's like season five or something. Season four or five is really good.
Yeah, they go some interesting places. After the season finale where they encounter
Inner Light is in season five also.
Yeah, at the end of season three they encounter the Borg. Picard gets assimilated, and then season four and then season five really have episodes where Picard is dealing with kind of his fragility I love that episode simply because Patrick Stewart, who is a fantastic Shakespearean actor. Has this kind of wonderful, noble speech at the end of it. And, he absolutely hasn't done anything wrong. And he defeats this woman, this judge, who has, you know, lost herself. Because of his nobility.
Witch-hunting, prejudiced person, right.
Yeah. And he is able to defeat her simply by his example and making people realize that.
Well, you don't F with Picard. Like he really won't. He will outsmart anybody on the street. That's what that episode's about. It's season four, episode 21. Mm-hmm. By the way, the drumhead.
Yeah.
I just recently rewatched this episode. And there's this like great shot of the speech at the end. Is all like one take.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm rewatching this, and I watched this when I was a kid, and I'm thinking to myself, God, I didn't notice this at all, but it's so good that Patrick Stewart is able to do this huge, long speech, and like hit all these moments, and it's so well written. That's a really, really good episode.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite episode is a episode called Tapestry. Well, it's a Q episode, but what happens is
oh, I remember this episode.
So, right.
Let him.
Yeah. So Picard gets shot, and he's going to die because he has an artificial heart from something that happened when he was in when he just got out of Starfleet Academy. He was an ensign, and he hasn't been assigned yet. And when he's having like a near-death experience, and Q shows up, and he's like, "I'm going to take you back to show you that moment and how this led to your death now." And he decides while he's there to change it and not get into the fight with the giant aliens that stab him in the back.
Nausicaans.
And because of that, he flashes forward in the future and he's alive, but he's not a captain anymore on the Enterprise.
He never became a captain.
Right. He's
like a mid-level technician.
Right. He's a mid-level tech on the Enterprise who studies like astrological. He's like a science officer. And the whole point of the episode is like he regrets that, but it's made him who he is. And in the end, he chooses to get stabbed in the back regardless and die when he's gonna die because he'll die as a captain, you know, kind of a thing. And it turns out he doesn't die, you know, Q saves him or whatever, or the doctor fixes him just in time. But it's an interesting idea of, hey, you might have a regret of the stupid shit you did when you were young, but it made you who you are today, so you should accept it, kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I love that.
Well, I think it tells this very human story with in this space odyssey setting, which we always talk about is what best science fiction does, is tells very human stories in this fantastic setting. What's great about this episode is the fact that we've heard Picard tell this story to other characters on the show in other episodes as like a dumb thing that he did when he was a kid.
Because
he's had other issues where, you know, they talk about his artificial heart and I'd be like, well, it was, you know, I got in a bar fight and I got stabbed through the chest and blah, blah, blah. You know, he has to go have some like maintenance done on the heart or something like that in an episode earlier in the series. And he recounts the story to Wesley or something like that. And this episode totally tells that story. And it's a simple idea. It's about, you know, he always says that he regrets about he was a young, dumb, and he got in a bar fight and almost killed him. And, you know, but to see how that one single moment can define your whole life, it's a great episode. And, you know, Q being Q,
he actually has wise moments. I'm having a moment about some commentary with regard to that. Episodes like this are always great, but they always have a great payoff because – I'm a badass right now. Like, it doesn't work if Picard is a fuck up.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so it's like it has its poignancy and it makes sense from the perspective of, you know, the tale they're trying to tell, simply because Picard is the greatest captain on the greatest ship.
Yep.
And so if this happens to, I guess this is part of the what happens all the time is that these things never happen to the flunky, who's right. a middle level manager.
This is why Q is interested in him because he's awesome.
Yeah, right. Picard is exceptional,
and so right. these godlike creatures, these godlike aliens, are just gonna put these people to the test and see how, like, what am I looking for? Like their conviction, you know? They're testing their
hardly any of these tales really play out the I am a mid-level manager and I'm having this moment and Q is going to send me back, and then we follow them forward to, okay, how did my life turn out differently if I walk away from the Nausicaan fight?
Right.
And so it strikes me that, you know, it's a hell of an episode. I love the episode, but it's always I'm awesome right now. And if I'd make different and I'm the sum of all my choices leading up to this moment, and so I'm going to live with that because I want to live with that because I'm comfortable with that and I'm satisfied with my life.
Totally.
Versus show me how it would turn out differently, and oh my God, it's freaking terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I might live a long time.
It'd be totally unfulfilled.
But it's totally unfulfilling.
I'm totally not, you know, who I was anymore because of it. And this is why I think Next Gen is so good and subsequent Star Trek is not as good, is because they ask these crazy questions. Like, you're given this gift and it's rooted in the characters and something they have to make a choice about. And it's like, human beings asking questions about themselves. You know, are our morals the best morals? You know, like, you've traveled through space and time, and this culture is very different than us. And how do we interact with them, and how do they perceive us? You know, and that's why Next Gen is so good. And the rest, the Star Treks after that, they kind of forgot. Like, Sometimes, you know, it's grounded in these characters, these interesting characters, but then they have to do, like, crazy interesting science fiction around them where they have to challenge themselves to overcome it. And that's why I think Next Gen is so good, because there's so many episodes that are like that. And so we've probably beat that to death. Let's move on to our scene red plate. We have a lot of scene, I think. So we have a few overlapping. So let's just try to stick to that, I guess. We all saw John Wick 2. It's not really, like, I guess it's kind of a genre film. I mean, it's geeky and related that it's like an action movie, right?
It's just a badass action movie.
So.
It's pretty much what we wanted from John Wick is like giant action movie, Keanu Reeves kicking ass for 2 hours, and this is basically that, like, and more of the universe that they inhabit, this weird gangster
universe that's governed by
criminals,
a very specific set of rules. Yeah, yep. A kind of a criminal this oligarchy or monarchy that exists.
Right, right.
Not a monarchy, because that's
Illuminati.
There's this weird, like, this secret subculture. Society, and he's just, like, this murdering, like...
Badass
dude that he
he's
has to...
Guy that he's everyone is he's the guy assassin. That everyone is afraid of.
Right.
Because he really is.
Because he's so much more badass than everybody else, I guess.
He does impossible things.
He does impossible shit, and it's exactly. Awesome. It's kind of is this movie like glorifying violence though? I mean, it's kind of like a video game.
You can make that argument for any
absolutely
movie.
Glorifying murder.
Yeah,
but
like you can't think about any details. Like, okay. He is leaving a trail of bodies. Where is the authorities?
Yeah, where's the cops?
He kills, I mean, like, at least 100 people in this movie
and
himself.
It never follows him anywhere.
Nope.
And his only interaction with a cop is the local Jersey cop
who
clearly knows him and his world and looks the other way.
Exactly.
So, but it's not a movie. The first one is like this. The second one is even more so like this. You cannot think too hard.
Yeah,
you just gotta roll with it.
You just gotta enjoy the ride because it's fun and quirky
I enjoyed it very much. It's just the difference is that it lacks the emotional resonance of the first one.
Yes,
The basis of the first one starts with the death of his wife and the killing of his puppy dog.
Yeah,
and that's connected to his wife, and then that through line is everywhere, and you understand. And everyone understand, I'm going to smoke all these fools because you're all related to
this you understand
tragedy.
His
Whereas chapter two it's all driven by a job. Yes, there is a tenuous connection to the original, I'm getting out. And it's connected to his former wife, his deceased wife. So all of that is there, except the second one is much more of a straightforward check your brain at the door. He just watch him and the master artist at work.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun. It's fun. Enjoyed it a lot, but it lacks sort of that immediate emotional pull.
The only thing that I can really see that's a giant flaw is what is his character arc really going through? Like, the choices that he makes are he kind of doesn't want to do the job, and then he's forced into the job, and then they betray him, and so he's got to like murder everybody. But it's sort of like what has his character changed from the beginning to the end?
Well, I have an answer to that.
Okay,
I had this in seeing it. He essentially accepts his death.
Mm.
When he returns to the house with the dog, he basically kills the dude. Anyway, spoiler.
Mm-hmm.
I won't go He takes action that he knows will have serious consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically accepts those consequences by returning to his home.
Mm-hmm.
And looking for a thing and sitting on the thing, he is ready to be done.
Yeah, but like,
someone's going to put a bullet in the back of his head.
Yeah, but like, what about that interaction with the Continental, the guy who runs the Continental,
Winston?
Yeah, what about that makes him not want to die? Is my thing. It's like, how does he convince him?
That's an excellent question, because when the dude comes to the house and picks him up.
Yeah,
there is some. He has a moment where, okay, I want to live now. He's expecting to die.
Yeah,
but then it's like, okay, I guess I'm not dying immediately. His will to survive, his survival instinct kicks in when Winston says to him, "You've got an hour."
Right.
And I think at that moment, it's okay. Do I stand around, or it's like he realizes? Okay, well, maybe I do want to live, and I want my dog to live, and you're giving me an hour, and that means that people are going to come at me, and I think that's when you see the flip. Reeves is not good enough to portray that moment of transformative change, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's not a good enough actor.
He's just not.
To demonstrate that
I mean,
the switch being flipped, because There is a moment where he decide. I think it was. I've given up, and then it's like, oh, I want to live, and I'm going to kill all you fools who are coming at me.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
But Reeves isn't good enough to pay that off. That's the big flaw.
Yeah, yeah. Keanu Reeves is good. I think he's good for what he does, but he has no like emotional depth that we can
and
get.
And that
from
moment
him.
Required it. That yeah. moment mm-hmm. out of any moment in the movie
totally.
Requires you to believe that he's gone from I've given up to I want to live and smoke all you fools.
Yeah, cuz there's not really like what's his reasoning to survive after all this kind of moment. And
right.
you don't get that.
You don't.
So I'm.
It absolutely sets up John Wick Chapter 3, which I'm sure we'll get.
I'm
in
sure
the next
we'll get
because
I'm sure this movie
will.
Made money. I mean,
oh, it
the
made tons.
The,
I'm sure
the theater I went to had tons of people in it. So
It did. It did better numbers than the first one over its opening weekend.
Wow. John, like, I didn't see John Wick 1 until it was on HBO.
Oh, I went to the theaters to see
oh,
it.
Oh, really?
I think I saw it in theater, yeah.
I saw it at an HBO at home, and I thought it was really good, but I didn't watch it in the theater, so that makes sense.
We watched, Susan and I watched the first one over the past weekend before I saw Chapter 2. And man, I could watch that movie 100 times and mm-hmm. enjoy it. It is such a visceral,
and it doesn't take itself too seriously. That's the whole point. Is it understands that it's kind of a
ridiculous
movie.
Not kinda. It's completely ridiculous. Yeah. But man, is it fun to watch?
Totally,
it is really fun.
Totally. What else? So last week. The show premiered Legion, which is an X-Men /
it's set in the X-Men universe
mutant show. What did we think of the first episode? I don't know how I feel about this show. It's pretty weird.
It is very weird, but deliberately so. It deals right. with a character who is wrestling with his own, you know, mental, his own sanity. No.
Yeah,
so, it confronts that straight away. If you had, I mean, knowing what we know about this character and doing a little bit of research, it tells you what he's an Omega level mutant. He has one of the most powerful mutant brains in the world, and he's capable of telepathy and telekinesis. You know, and if he could
altering reality,
if he can do all of that, how would that affect his perception of reality and himself?
Right.
I think the show did a great job of that. I loved it for its weirdness and its
definite
to
weirdness.
Communicate. It was an attempt to communicate the world from his perspective.
What
I love the fact that was great.
So theories. We've gotten a lot of information from the first episode. The guy with the yellow eyes could be that weird guy from another dimension who's in... he kind of looks like him. From the comics, I'm trying to remember his name. I looked it up. Creature from the comics that's impacting Legion's mind, and are all these people that he's interacting with, are they actually there, or is it different personalities?
Those are questions that are going to have to be answered.
I don't
answered.
Think we can answer any of that, because the way that the show has set it up is, I think you question all of it.
Yeah,
you really do.
Like, how much of this is real and how much of this is happening in his brain, and
right.
and if he's able to control reality, then everything is real and is happening in his brain, cuz his brain can change, his crazy brain could
right.
be changing the world.
What would I mean think about that. What would be, if he's able to do that, and he's
right.
everything is inside his head, except it manifests itself. There's no way to define what reality is for a mutant like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So here's something that is crazy.
He could be in a bubble of reality that is all of his own creation
right.
all the time.
It's exactly. all his own mind. Yeah, and his mind is just going right. crazy. Right.
It's bonkers to think about, and that's why I think the first episode did a great job of trying to capture some of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's frustrating as hell, and it's hard
yeah.
to follow. But I really, it was so, they show shows like this take risks, and I like the risk taking.
And I like the style.
Sometimes you got to push the envelope.
Right. This is it's definitely taking some chances, and it's odd, and it's not a normal linear show. I don't think people are going to oh, this is great. I think a lot of people are going to be turned off by it, and a lot of people there's going to be this little group that are faithful to it, who are this is the best show ever.
They're going to be very fascinated by all the twists and turns and
what it all means. What is the character's powers? Who are these? There's so much mystery and weirdness to it that it'll bring people back.
What's funny as somebody who watched Downton Abbey, the lead in Legion played Matthew.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Downton Abbey. He wanted to leave the show. Spoiler, and he dies.
Downton Abbey.
It's been over for 2 years, and he's been off the show for 5. His character was the main, love interest for one of the daughters on Downton Abbey.
Yeah, they were married.
They had a kid.
That's when I stopped watching, is when he got killed. Because he was my favorite character.
But it's so funny to see him in that series, which is so almost kind of so straightforward in terms of just this melodrama, this stately English, manor house with upstairs, downstairs, blah, blah, blah. And it's just a drama, to him playing the lead in this kind of deeply twisty, deliberately misleading, kind of confusing show. I mean, it's deliberately confusing.
Right.
They're playing with our ideas of perception and everything else. It's just fun to see him. And he does a really good job as the lead, as David in this show. Mm-hmm. So
in the comics, he's the son of Professor Xavier also. Do you think they'll get into that kind of, is that going to be related, or do you
I've
think
heard
they're
some chatter that they'll eventually relate it to the movies that have existed, whether or not, it all depends on whether or not the show succeeds in a lot of ways as to how they tie
in. We live in a world where movies and TV shows that are related in the same universe are talked about. Marvel has done this fantastically, where they have these movies and then they come out with this TV show, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., that's gonna hey, this is stuff that's going on.
All the series that are on Netflix.
All the series that are on Netflix are impacted by the movies. And so I love that people are doing this now, where it's hey, these movies are connected, and this TV show is also connected, and it's an interesting time for entertainment, because you got to watch all these things to get the whole picture.
Or you can watch them just on the sake of their own stories, and
totally,
you can have a bigger idea of what's going on in the universe, but hopefully the story is strong enough that it stands on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, the Netflix series certainly have done that, and hopefully this Legion series, as it ties into the X-Men universe, will do the same thing. It'll stand on its own, but existing in the X-Men universe will only make it that much richer.
Totally.
Yep.
We should probably move on to some other stuff, but I would like to talk about last week's episode of The Magicians, the third episode. Holy crap. The fight finally happened between the Beast and I'm blanking.
The Breakbills kids.
Breakbills kids, and it was awesome. Great.
It was awesome.
Magic, dual, crazy action.
Very tense.
Very tense.
Very violent.
Yeah. The show is dark and they're gritty, There's some crazy stuff that happens. They kill off one of the main characters, and spoiler alert.
Do they?
I don't know. We'll see. Tonight's a new episode, and we'll see what happens. So that ending is what happens at the end of book one.
Have you read book two?
I have not read book two, but
so we have no idea if the subsequent stuff follows the second book.
Right. I believe so. They go into what Quentin does after so-and-so dies in that moment.
Or is changed.
He tries to get her back at the end of book one. And then he ultimately gives up magic, but then he gets pulled back into it at the very end of the book. And so there's kind of, I feel like this is how the first season should have ended. Like, this is a weird, this is a big, big, like, thing that should have happened at the end of season one. And I don't think they had enough money to do the, they season one was good enough that they got enough money that they could do the special effects to do the duel the way that they wanted to in season two. That's my thought on that.
Well, I mean, that's kind of a inside baseball kind of thought.
Right,
they just might have reached a point in the story where it was a good cliffhanger to try to rope people into the first.
Right.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, they're building towards this confrontation, and then they have the confrontation, and everybody gets fucked.
Yeah.
And then they got to pick up the pieces. It's a good place to end the first season, in my opinion, then pick up the pieces and, you know, really, because we, you know, they get into fillery and then they have to figure out the ins and outs of fillery, kind of, and then they have to, they confront him and they lose, and then it's all about figuring out how to, you know, get back to a place where, because, I mean, he's coming for them. He's gonna, you know, he is gonna kill them at some point. So.
Well, I mean, he's not, I guess he's not the ultimate bad guy, or, you know, whether he's still alive or not or what. But Renard seems to be, like, Renard the Fox seems to be more the bad guy for this season's.
We'll see.
We'll see.
It's a fun show. It's deeply weird and dark and violent and still very funny.
Yeah.
Like in the episode where they have that duel at the end with the beast, they have that whole, you know, the curse. They sit on the cursed thrones and they're all going to kill each other.
Yeah.
And Penny has to figure out how to.
They essentially
break the
do.
Curse.
It's so funny.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so whack job.
Yeah.
But still, so, and that's happening in the middle of this episode where they're trying to figure out how to confront the big bad. There's just hilarious.
They got to, like, overcome this curse that he's cursed them with. It's so, so interesting. Like,
so
you could,
goofball.
You could, that's what I love about it. It's so odd and strange and weird storytelling, and
still works in a lot of ways.
Still works. So I'm excited about that. Do we have any other scene that we want to touch on?
I'll touch on something really quickly. I rewatched the entire Dark Knight trilogy this past weekend.
Oh, wow.
Haley had never seen The Dark Knight Rises, so we just decided to watch all three of the movies again.
As you do.
Wow, I love Batman, and that those three movies are as good as it gets. I mean, The Dark Knight, I told the story about
that movie.
I told the story to Haley, and it's absolutely true how the three of us went and saw the sneak preview in IMAX, and how at the end of the movie, how we felt, and how the movie made us feel, and being the fanboys that we were, and how this was kind of such a perfect realization of what we want Batman to be and what a Batman story could be.
Yep.
And how sad we were that Heath Ledger was dead, and we'd never see him play the Joker again. I mean, it's true, and I said it to her. But it was hard for me to watch that movie for a while because of the experience of seeing it and how good it was and how sad I was that we'd never see anything like that again.
So I completely forgot something else that came out this weekend. I went and saw Lego Batman. Did you see Lego Batman, Andrew?
I haven't seen Lego Batman.
Holy crap, go see it because it's related to what you're talking about.
Okay.
There are these inside jokes of Batman, like, referencing the movies and all of the movies and the TV shows and all of the costumes.
Okay.
And it is so, like, those moments are so funny. Lego Batman is hilarious.
All right.
And and talking about all the Batmans, it talks about all the Batmans. It just is. Like, he's lived through all of that. He's done all of them.
It sounds awesome.
It's so awesome. And he's just like the same guy. It's just,
I want to take Cure to see that.
See it. It's oh my god,
Andrew,
let's
hilarious.
Let's go on set.
Okay, so we'll talk about that next time more in depth after you guys see it, because Lego Batman, dude, there's this scene where he talks about all of the Dark Knights.
We're gonna watch
my god, it's so fucking.
Watch it this weekend.
Go do it, and then we'll talk about it. That's awesome, man. Christopher, do you have any other scene?
No, there's other stuff, but we can move on.
We can move on.
Yep.
You know, I'm still watching all the things, you know, Arrow, Legends, Supergirl, Flash, all that. Oh, and The Expanse came back.
Yeah.
I mean, three episodes in.
That's what I will bring up.
We might have to do a one shot once the season's
totally.
Over.
For sure.
Because
that show picked up right where it left off, mm-hmm. and it's freaking great.
Totally.
I'm turning on that show.
New episode tonight. Wednesdays are big. Like, Wednesdays are Arrow, Expanse, Legion. Isn't Legion tonight?
The Legion is tonight, too.
Wow.
My DVR is getting full. I got to watch some things.
Yeah, you got to watch some of these things. Let's move on to some Red.
Yep.
Andrew, what do you have for...
I would be able to finish. I just didn't. I'm still reading Babylon's Ashes. The most recent part is probably the most stunning part of the book so far for me. The Rosinante gets into a battle, a space battle, mm-hmm. and it's told through the point of view of... this will spoiler it, but it doesn't matter. Bobby Draper is on the Rosinante, and she's pretty much part of the crew now.
Yeah,
and she's, you know, highly trained special forces Martian Marine, but part of her training is being able to fight on a gunship of the Rosinante's type, because the Rosinante is a Martian gunship. And how the writer communicates and illustrates a space battle told in three dimensions through the point of view of a gunner on this spacecraft, and how she, you know, the technical know-how that would take into it, and the, you know, the weapon systems and how they would function, and the
attention to detail.
It's fantastic. I'm only two thirds through the book. It's the most compelling part of really recently any of the novels that I've read. It's just so perfectly rendered, and how complex and all the different facets and disciplines you'd have to be able to fight a ship in three dimensions in space with the kind of weapons that and it all makes sense. You could totally track everything, and you know, you're not, it was just amazing how the writer was able to do that. And it's why I love, you know, these books, because it can get to those moments, and it's told through, you know, this beloved character's eyes, how this interaction happens and how this battle takes place, and you're able to track the whole thing, and it's so vividly realized in your imagination. It was just fantastic. I can't rave it about it enough. It was great.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Christopher, did you finish Seven Evas?
No.
Seven Evas.
I'm approaching the end. Okay. It is... I really like it. I really like Stevenson as an author. But damn, I just need to commit to a long stretch of reading, because it's hard to take it down when I'm falling asleep. So I will finish it hopefully in the next couple of weeks. I'm committed to that. It's really good. He is so good at conveying detail about the shit he writes about. And this is, you know, the premise of the book is the destruction of the moon and the destruction of the earth and the killing of everyone who remains on earth and the struggle for humans to stay alive in manufactured space. Mm-hmm. And what you have to do, and the detail involved and the physics involved in moving giant blocks of ice in space and shit like mm-hmm. that is just, it's really interesting, but damn, it's not quick. So it's a lot, but it's,
other things.
I continue to listen to Bloodline, Star
yeah.
Wars.
Oh yeah.
Bloodline.
Mm-hmm. Star Wars Bloodline.
It is, it's a weird sort of politician / space pirate investigation book. With Princess Leia at the center.
Okay.
Senator.
Does it make sense? Does the character make sense? Is this how Leia would behave
yes.
in your mind?
Yes.
Okay.
It makes sense on that level.
Good.
But it's that's a I'm struggling to understand why someone would say yes, write this book.
Money.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that's part of it.
People are going to buy it. Like,
people are going to devour Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, no, I know. But and it has some very interesting elements about – the most interesting part of it is the story it's telling about a colleague in basically the other party who is also a senator from a different planet, and the camaraderie between Leia and this other senator. And this other senator is a collector of Empire paraphernalia and memorabilia.
Okay.
And there's this whole – it sheds light on this whole subculture of 30 years after the Empire has collapsed. Of course there would be, just like there are Nazi sort of collectors, there are these collectors of Empire stuff. And this one senator, who seems to be a very good person, is also a collector of these things. And
weird. That's weird.
And it's a discussion about – I still am skeptical. I'm waiting for the big reveal that says that this person is evil.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't seem to be going that route, and that would be too obvious at this point. And so it's an odd sort of window into the mindset of folks who would be collectors of Empire stuff, and how he separates himself from the truly Nazi sympathizer collectors who want the who respect and really long for the days of Palpatine and Vader.
They revere
Palpatine,
the Empire.
And Vader.
Yeah.
Whereas this guy grew up on a planet that was subjugated by Vader, and his parents were tortured by Vader, and so he has no love for the personalities. But he has an affinity to the order that the Empire imposed upon the universe, and so it's a weird sort of thing.
That is
anyway.
Weird.
I like the book, I think, but it's
an interesting situation when you have to put "I think" on the end of that statement.
Yeah.
We'll see how it ends.
How
far are you into it?
I'm 80% through it.
80%.
All right.
So the last 20
percent through, and you're still unsure whether or not you actually like it.
Yeah,
that's a weird place to be in.
Right, exactly. I think the end of the book will really tell you whether you like it or not. So
I will be able to report. Oh my god, what a dumbass book! Or
seriously,
or it paid off. But anyway, yeah, that's my
totally. I continue to listen to Story by Robert McKee. It's about script writing. Nothing Else Geeky Read. I'm kind of failing.
It's all right.
But
people are busy.
People are busy.
People have stuff to do.
So let's move on to Played. Christopher, what Played do you have?
The only thing I will highlight on Played is Fire Emblem Heroes.
Okay. For the iPhone.
YouTube nerds have been playing this stupid shit. I'm playing the hell
out of that on my phone.
How much money have you spent?
None.
Wow.
That's good. Good for you.
You had this confessional moment in the group text earlier this week about how you feel like you might have to spend some money on this game.
I have not.
All right. Is that... Yes. Purely self-discipline or you have...
Purely self-discipline. I had definitely weak moments where I was like, I'm dropping $20 on this. but no, not yet.
All right. Hasn't happened yet.
Yes, it's fun. It's the art is terrific. The gameplay is simple, but there's strategery to it.
Strategic.
Yep. I like the role-playing aspect, the RPG aspects of leveling up your character and making your character more powerful. I like the randomness of summoning characters that hopefully are 4 and 5 stars. I like most of the elements of it. enough so that I've, you know, leveled up four of my characters past level 20. Yeah, it's fun.
I think this explains why you haven't been playing a lot of Game Pigeon games over the past 2 weeks, because you've been playing a lot of this on your phone.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right, I have.
Yep. It's cool, and the combat's fun, and the art's cool. I kind of lost a little interest because it's very repetitive.
Yes, it seems there is a plateau.
Right.
I've gotten this one team of characters up to 20, and it gets hard.
Yeah.
And then you have to sort of grind some leveling and do some more grinding.
If you were to spend some money, would it be easier?
Probably.
No, because it's no... Spending money does not guarantee you more powerful characters.
Oh, okay.
And spending money only gets you characters that you then have to grind up to 20 anyway.
Oh.
And it's really not... That's why I think I've been able to resist any money. And if you have a lot of this currency, there's a strong possibility that you're going to get a really powerful character or characters, and then they will be part of your team. They can level up and kick ass. But there's a lot of repetitive sort of grindiness about it,
mm-hmm.
that have a whole stable of characters now, but only four are over level 20. And I'm like, oh, do I want to level up these others that are all level 9?
Mm-hmm.
And add them into the mix? No, not really. So anyway, I played a hell of a lot of it when it first came out. The last few days, it's been hit and miss. So,
great.
Andrew,
me. I had a gripe recently in an episode about how Titanfall 2. I hadn't been playing.
Okay.
And in the campaign of the game. I'm very close to the end. I've kind of got one boss fight left. I had a bit of a rage quit the other night because I'm stuck and I can't figure out the right combination. Yeah, I couldn't figure out the right combination of loadouts to kind of – like I had gotten the boss down really low and then more ads showed up and I just got smoked because I didn't know – I was too weak to deal with them and I didn't have any – like I didn't have any health. You have to pick up batteries to heal your Titan essentially because your power gets low and your hull gets compromised. So I was frustrated. So I stopped playing it. I haven't picked it up in a couple of days, but it's been so much fun. There's been interesting boss fights over the last couple of levels, I guess you could call them. So that's been a lot of fun.
So the bosses are the Titans, or are you fighting the dude who's inside of his Titan?
You're fighting characters who are in their unique Titans.
Right. So the guy can like jump out too, and you got to shoot the guy, or is he just staying as Titan?
You've encountered that a couple of times, but for the most part, you fight the Titan and you defeat the Titan.
Right,
the guy is killed.
That's an interesting idea where it's like your Titan goes off to fight his Titan, and you got to fight the guy with your weapon.
But the game sets up the idea that the Titan is more effective. The Titan has an AI, and he is a fully realized character in the game. And you actually come to a moment where there's a huge moment of drama associated with your Titan and being in jeopardy, and you find yourself very worried and sad because something happens to your Titan. You get deeply connected to this Titan over the game.
Mm-hmm.
But the Titan never fights better than when you're piloting the Titan.
Totally.
Two of you on a neural – like the story tells – is like we are 100% combat effective, and you fight better together.
Right.
So you always engage the other Titan. But yeah, you don't – I'm trying to remember whether or not you have a boss fight throughout the entire game where you end up fighting the guy and the two Titans engage themselves maybe once or twice, but it's very sporadic.
Sure.
But the game's great. The combat's a lot of fun. I'm very close to the end. I will say – Chris and I, we've been playing a little bit of Game Pigeon games, the mobile app where you play on your phones. He hit me with we played miniature golf.
Oh wow.
I play on my iPad.
And I play on my iPhone 6.
Yeah.
I almost universally like Game Pigeon games. The controls are very straightforward and intuitive. They're fun. I haven't encountered a game that I didn't like until we played miniature golf.
Oh my god, controls, why?
That game sucked.
The controls were they were not intuitive. It was hard to figure out the best way
The camera stuff
yes.
with the with the like shot making was really weird. Yeah,
really, and you couldn't actually visualize the entire hole, but you're kind of like guessing where you have to hit the ball. It was not fun. I would not. We're not playing that game again, Christopher. If you challenge me, I'm not going to play you.
Wow.
Because it just wasn't fun.
No fun.
Every other game we played on Game Pigeon has been fun.
Yep.
I have enjoyed very much. But miniature golf was not fun.
I haven't updated mine in a while. I haven't played.
You should update it.
I haven't played Game Pigeon in a while.
Yeah.
So I will touch on one thing. I played the For Honor open beta this weekend before it came out on Tuesday or Monday night, if you really were committed. I found my character, and I talked about how hard this game was, but I was playing with my homies, and all the guys I game with all the time, they had it too, and we were running around. I'm pretty sure I'm like the master of this game now.
Whoa.
There was a couple of times where people would smoke me, because, I mean, that's how great this game is like, no matter how good you are, like, you can't be perfect all the time, and you gotta be perfect all the time to smoke. But there were times where this game makes you feel ass.
Mm-hmm.
And
are you still playing as a Nibushi, like the spear samurai warrior?
Yeah, Nibushi is my character. I don't even care. I played a couple others, but no one is near as awesome.
Okay.
And I just wreck. There will be games where, like, my teammates would have, like, 5 or 6 kills, and I would have 15. Like, that's the kind of shit. Like, I figured the character out, and I'm just destroying.
Well, that means that your friends probably suck.
That could be. These guys are pretty good at gaming.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and this is a very hard game. But there's a couple of times where I was fighting two people at once and killing them both. Like that, there was a time where it's impossible to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just, but I'm probably going to, just trying to get some more, you know, my own writing done and not play video games every day, all day.
That's something you should do.
The creative struggle.
It's real.
So creative struggle.
Okay, dude.
Yeah.
Shut up.
So that's all I have to talk about. Andrew.
Yes, sir.
What do you have for trivia for us?
For trivia, just to give a shout out to our legendary listener, Sean, who actually suggested this trivia question.
Awesome, Sean. Thank
nice.
You.
Hello.
Yeah, Sean coming through.
I talked to him today, by the way.
How is Sean doing? How's the Colonel?
Excellent. He's doing very well.
Good. We need to have him back on the show. We say that all the time.
We do. In fact, I told him that I would bring that up with you all, and we need to schedule.
Anytime, Sean.
Schedule him to be a guest.
Anytime. Yeah, next episode. We got to start
next episode, Sean.
All right, next episode. I'll talk to him.
Okay,
sweet.
Good.
Sounds good. Okay, on suggestion of legendary listener Sean, the trivia is Batman themed, which kind of ties into
awesome. Let's go.
What we're talking about. Okay, excluding the actors who portrayed Batman in the serials from the early 40s and 50s, name all of the actors and voice actors who have portrayed the Batman on the big screen. The big screen.
Big screen.
Actors and voice actors.
Okay. Adam West, because he has one.
Michael Keaton.
He had Michael Keaton,
George Clooney,
Val Kilmer, Christian Bale, Ben Affleck. Mask of the Phantasm was an animated one that did go to theaters. I saw it in the theaters. And
Kevin Conroy.
Kevin Conroy. Boom. Thank you, Christopher. Are we missing anybody? I'm thinking Batman. There's got to be like some random movie where he like appears for a second. And
I'm sure there's somebody who voiced him that is not Kevin Conroy.
Right.
That I have no idea.
How'd we do, Andrew?
I think we got most of them, though.
You're glaring oversight, Patrick, because you just saw the movie.
Oh!
Lego Batman.
Tim, what's his freaking name? Jeez. I'm blanking on it. I can't come up with it. You're going to say
Will Arnett?
Will Arnett! Thank you. Will Arnett.
Yes. Will Arnett plays voices Batman in Lego Movie, right?
Yeah, Lego Movie is the Lego same Batman. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, no, Adam good, West, good. Michael Keaton, Val Kilmer, George Clooney, Christian Bale, Ben Affleck, Will Arnett, and Kevin Conroy. I would argue, honestly, the Mask of Phantasm animated movie was released in theaters. It was for the big screen. Is a fantastic Batman movie.
One of the best Batman movies ever made.
Yeah, it's really good.
Like, that's
you gotta watch it. Mask
really,
of Phantasm.
Really good. Yep. So,
good job, boys.
Yeah, that was good. We did pretty well. I forgot Lego Batman. I just talked
Lego
about
Batman.
That.
Yep.
Gosh, dumbass. Yep.
If you'd like to help Andrew with his trivia, you should email him at kingofthenorth52@gmail.com. You should email the show for any comments or suggestions for brothersgeekpodcast@gmail.com. Twitch, watch Brothers Geek Played, and then, of course, brothersgeek.com with all your show things.
Excellent.
Excellent work, gentlemen.
Abide, everyone.